Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that was the grossest thing I've ever heard in my life. Now you're all in big, big trouble.
I like your little game here. I'd like to go pro.
That's the worst idea I've ever heard in my life, Tom.
Yes, this is horrible. Send you.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful. No yelling on the bus.
That's right. I can't have anyone freak out there, okay? We've got to keep our composure. Not too far. There's too much to lose. Nothing. Keep our composure.
You might not know our names, but after tonight, at least 22 or so of you will. Live from my mother-in-law's basement, it's the Average Show Sports Show on the Sports Beat Radio Network. Hi, everybody. Bill Furness hanging out with you here this evening. I'm going to be joined by our motley cast of characters, including Lewis Hamway from BleacherReport.com. Talk a little NHL playoffs later on in the show. Dan Lewis, the smartest man alive, is scheduled to join us here shortly. Though in typical fashion, he's a little bit late, but have no fear. We can talk baseball, of course, with Ethan Noroff, our new co-host, not just an NBA guy, I'm told. Ethan joins us on the phone lines right now. Ethan, you ready to talk some baseball?
Absolutely. Totally excited about the beginning of the season, so let's get after it.
We've got Michael Schotte, also a familiar voice from the program. He'll be joining us a little bit later. We'll talk some NFL with Mike. So big, big show planned. As we wait for Dan Lewis to join us here on the program, let's start out in the West, Ethan. Let's talk a little bit as we kick off this American League preview. We're going to talk about any of the storylines or changes, stuff that you're looking for, and we've got to start at the top. It's been a long time since the American League West has been considered a baseball powerhouse, and yet obviously the Rangers have had their World Series appearances now the last couple of seasons, and with the LA Angels of Anaheim doing what they've done, suddenly this is the hot place to be. Talk to me about the four teams that are out there. We can just run down the list, starting with Texas. Tell me what you're looking for out of those teams and then where you might see them finishing.
Cool. Well, I think, you know, let's start with Texas, like you said. That's a good place to start. They have to get a healthy season from Josh Hamilton in order to really get going. You know, he's a guy who's had trouble staying healthy for the full 162 previously, but they need a good 140 to 150 games out of him for them to really click on all cylinders. They also need Yu Darvish to work out. They spent a lot of money on Yu Darvish to bring him in. He was the prize of the offseason. So they need Darvish as well as the rest of that pitching staff to, you know, really step up to the plate and be what they can be. There are some questions with the team. You know, how effective can Joe Nathan be in the closer role that they signed him to be in? Will the rest of the bullpen hold up? How will Nestalí Feliz transition to a starter? But they need the starting rotation to work out, and they need Josh Hamilton to really play well.
What about L.A.? And this, of course, has been the highlight of the offseason because of Albert Pujols, because of Wilson going there. We talked a little bit with Dan Lewis last week about the storylines. Everybody knows those big names. But what about the stuff that the Angels already had? They were a fairly decent team last year, and people thought that they might be going through a middling phase, yet they were in contention through a lot of the season.
Yeah, you know, the Angels are a really interesting team. They're going to try out Mark Trumbo playing third base this season a little bit. They need to get his bat into the lineup. He's just got too much power to be sitting onto the bench. So that's already been an interesting experiment, as he had a tough go of things on Friday night when he tried to play third base. But that's what happens when you make room for a player of Albert Pujols' stature. He makes everybody in the lineup better from top to bottom. And I don't think there's any question that the Angels, you know, are a better team for bringing him in. The real X factor in my mind for the Angels is going to be the health and production of Kendrys Morales. And we're talking about a guy who spent last year and a half on the sidelines due to this devastating injury he suffered after hitting the walk-off and his teammates all crashed down to him on home plate, and that's why players don't jump on home plate anymore. So he's looked good in spring training. He had a fairly nice day today once again, but it's really going to be all about how this guy performs, because if they can get production from Pujols and Morales in the middle of that lineup, it just makes them that much better.
It's been a long time since Moneyball was relevant. The Oakland A's have been mired in mediocrity for a long time. They develop nice prospects. There's no question about that. It's just those prospects end up playing for somebody else by the time they really get good. Is it going to be any different in Oakland this year?
You know, I don't think it's going to be. Like you said, you know, when they get good, they're usually gone. And with Oakland, you know, you have a lot of guys who are untested previously. Yeah, Jamal Weeks is great at second base. He's a speedster. He gets on base a lot. He's a good player. They spent a lot of money to bring in Jonas Cespedes in center field, who could be a very good player, but he might take some time to transition. And so it's really going to depend on what kind of production they can get from that offense. Brandon McCarthy is the anchor of that staff, as well as Bartolo Colon behind him. And yeah, Colon looked good in his debut, but is he going to hold up for the whole year? I just think there are so many question marks on this team, and I don't know if there are any sure things, whether it's within the offense rotation or the bullpen. There are just too many question marks on this team for me to think that they have a realistic shot of turning it around this season.
Then finally, the cellar dwellers for the last couple of years, the Seattle Mariners, really have flung out in a bunch of different directions. They tried to bring in veteran help that didn't work. Everybody knew about their offensive woes last season. And then really what seemed to be their prize prospect, Michael Pineda, is gone now after this season, going to the New York Yankees. Maybe, just maybe, that trade will work out in the Mariners' favor. Do they have a shot at finishing above fourth this year?
I mean, we're talking about a team that has Kevin Millwood in the rotation. You know, this isn't 1997. This is 2012. They do have some really interesting young pieces in the infield. They have Justin Smoke at first base and Dustin Ackley at second, so they have a nice right side. I'm not really in love with their left side, Brendan Ryan and Sean Figgins. I think I could send a couple of 13-year-olds out there, and they might produce the same thing offensively. Ichiro is nice in the outfield, still hitting third. Is going to be a transition for him. But again, too many question marks on this team. The rotation behind Felix Hernandez leaves a lot to be desired. You know, I think Brandon Lee had a good year last year as this team's closer, but he doesn't have swing and miss type of stuff. He doesn't strike out a lot of guys. So if the scouting report catches up to him, you know, that's going to be another area of concern. I just don't see any way this team can compete in a division that's loaded with offense at the top between Los Angeles and Texas.
Despite the way that things have changed in the American League West, will they end up being the same? How do you see the division finishing out, Ethan?
I see Texas finishing in first place in that division. I think the Angels have a good shot of finishing in second. I like the Athletics to finish ahead of the Mariners in third, only because I think Oakland has a more balanced approach, as weird as that is to say. I just don't like what I see from the Mariners. I think their rotation is just not good after Felix Hernandez. And what is there to like in Seattle? It's very hard for me to find something that I really, really like, and I don't see it happening.
Joel Cordes, Ethan Noroff, hanging out here with you on the Average Joe Sports Show on blogtalkradio.com and the Sports Geeks Radio Network. Mike Schotte will be joining us shortly. Lewis Hamway will join us, talk some NHL playoffs. We've got NBA playoff stuff right around the corner, too, as teams are jockeying for position. Dan Lewis should be joining us here at some point, but we'll soldier on nonetheless. Let's go to the AL Central. That would be where my heart is. Let's talk first about the team that really ran away with the division last year, the Detroit Tigers. the best just got better, it seemed like. We know about the injury issues that they've had here in the early season, but then, of course, there's that Prince Fielder guy they added as well. Why are the Detroit Tigers still the class of the American League Central?
Oh, that offense, it's just ridiculous. You know, we saw it on display already today. Prince Fielder and Miguel Cabrera both going yard two times. I mean, that who do you want to pitch to in that lineup? It's loaded from 1 through 7. They have so many guys who can hit the ball on you, and not only hit the ball, but hit it for power. And then that they have a killer rotation. Justin Verlander, who's obviously MVP and Cy Young last season. They can get Max Scherzer and Rick Porcello going behind Verlander. You know what you're going to get from Doug Fister, who was steady after he came over from Seattle at the trade deadline last season. I just think there's a whole lot to like about this team. The bullpen can be serviceable. You know, every bullpen is bound to some bumps and bruises along the way as we get through the season. For the most part, they got a nice little solid bullpen. They have a staff that's capable of going deep into games. And I just think that this is a team that could really emerge not only out of the division, but as a contender for the World Series if everything aligns right.
First half of last year, the Cleveland Indians were the talk of Major League Baseball. Many had predicted them to be in the bottom of the AL Central and suddenly resurgent. They were striking at the division and, in fact, were in the division lead for portions of the early half of the season, and yet then the bottom fell out as the year went on. They ended up finishing 2 games under .500. Did the Cleveland Indians get better, Ethan? Can they close the deal and contend for a wild card? We certainly know there's a lot of big teams, including the Angels and potentially the Rays, Red Sox, Yankees. There's a lot of different teams that are going to be vying for those two spots.
You know, the Indians are really interesting because they made that trade for Yubaldo Jimenez last season. They gave up, you know, quite a bit to acquire him from Colorado with the idea that these 2 years were going to be their years of contention. You know, the seasons that they had Jimenez under control, that these were going to be the years they went after it. Justin Masterson and Jimenez have turned in, you know, two fairly good outings so far this season. A lot to like about that at the top of the rotation. But again, in this offense, I just see too many holes. They committed to Grady Sizemore again in the offseason. Why, I don't know, because this kid just can't stay healthy. So the outfield is, you know, it's an outfield that's going to feature a lot of Shelly Duncan. And how does that sound to you? Because it doesn't sound like it's going to get it done for me. I like Carlos Santana behind the plate a lot. I think he's a great young hitter with a lot of power. Obviously, as Drubal Cabrera took a big step forward last season, turned out to be a heck of a player at shortstop. But, you know, unless Jason Kipnis takes a huge step at second base and somebody in the outfield between Michael Brantley, Shin-Soo Choo, Shelly Duncan, and maybe even a little bit of Aaron Cunningham, I mean, are any of those guys going to give you the numbers that you need to have? I just don't see it happening. But, you know, this is a team that could get better. And if they acquire another bat at the trade deadline or before the trade deadline, it might really change my opinion of exactly what's happening for this club.
NHL playoff preview, NFL news and notes, NBA talk. That's all around the corner here on the Average Joe Sports Show. Ethan Noroff and yours truly, Joel Cordes, will talk some more baseball continuing in the AL Central. And then there's that little thing called the AL East. That's all coming up next here on the Sports Geeks Radio Network.
Hey, this is Mark Cuban of the Dallas Mavericks. You're listening to the Average Joe Sports Show.
Finally, those capitalist pigs will pay for their crimes, eh? Hey, comrade!
What if he shot me in the face?
That's the risk we were willing to take.
And you choose to thank me by throwing a knife at my head?
There's no crying in baseball!
I want you to know that your father loves you both very much.
But he throws like a girl.
So did Martina Navratilova.
What were you doing exactly?
I was eating pop.
Putting cat filthy emptiness inside me? But it'll help.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
Hey, welcome back. It's the Average Joe Sports Show here on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. Joel Cordes, Ethan Noroff hanging out with you right now, talking some baseball. We are in the AL Central, and this is where things get cloudy, Ethan. Detroit and Cleveland were the front runners last year before the Tigers finally pulled away, and then the 3 through 5 spots were in flux. The Chicago White Sox ended up finishing third, but I don't know if anybody felt very confident about that finish. And in fact, the clouds seem to be a little bit darker over the South Side this year. Can Chicago even hope to finish that high?
I think they can. I mean, I think it's going to depend on, like a lot of things, it's going to depend on if their big bats can get it going. You know, I know this has been the same storyline for a lot of clubs here, but it's early in the season, and a lot of these teams need their big boppers to produce. Specifically for the White Sox, they need a big year from Adam Dunn. He was absolutely miserable last season. He looked completely lost at the plate. It was not the player they signed up to get, and he wound up hitting for a ridiculous average. He hit well below 200, and he just didn't fill the shoes that he was supposed to. So they need a bounce-back year from him in the worst way. He's got to hit 30 or more home runs. He's got to drive in around 100 runs. That's the only way this team is really going to get it going. You know, they're relying on a couple of young guys in the infield. I like Alejandro Diaz in the outfield a lot. I think he can be a Shane Victorino type of player where he slaps the ball around the field. He hits a lot of doubles. He hits for a solid average. He gets on base a lot. But, you know, this team really, really needs to take a step forward overall. And I'm not sure if the starting rotation got better or worse in this offseason. You know, I don't know what to expect from Philip Humber in a full year. And I don't know. I think that Detroit is a better team. I just don't think there's a superior team to the Tigers in this division, regardless of what Adam Dunn or what the pitching staff does for the Sox.
Last year was considered a successful season, an up-and-coming season for the Kansas City Royals, despite the fact that they finished 20 games under 500 and 24 games back in the division. That's just the way that things have been for the Royals here over the last couple of decades. And yet there's some positivity and some buzz around this young team. Will any of it be fulfilled this year?
I think we'll see flashes of it. I don't think we'll see it come out of its shell entirely this season, but I certainly think we'll see flashes. I think there's a lot to like about Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas. I think that's a great first and third combination for years to come. It's too bad that they don't have, you know, a lot of pitching depth on this team in the starting rotation. I like Luke Hochschaber a lot. He's a guy who turned in a great second half after the All-Star break last year and looks primed to pick back up from where he left off. But I think Bruce Chen has a lot of question marks. I think Jonathan Sanchez has a lot of question marks. And beyond that, I don't think the pitching staff is ready for this team to contend. You know, they have a nice group on offense. Alex Gordon obviously came out of his shell last season as well. And, you know, they could win some games with their offense, but I'm not sure if their starting pitching staff is going to keep them in every game. It's too bad, though, because they do have a strong bullpen. Aaron Crow, Greg Holland, both in that bullpen, and the reclamation project that is Jonathan Broxton also in there. I think it's a really interesting mix of arms down in the pen, but starting staff has a lot of ifs in there, a lot of hypotheticals.
Now on to my Minnesota Twins, a team that certainly their health issues were well documented last year. Ridiculous number of games missed by not only the big names. Justin Morneau obviously hasn't been healthy in a couple of seasons. Joe Mauer was not himself last year. But then even guys like Michael Kadire and Jason Kubel, both who are gone now from the Twins, they had a lot of star power last year if they would have been able to put it on the field. It looked on paper to be one of the more balanced teams they had fielded in a while. That's typically a team that, you know, was contending for division titles, if not winning division titles here over the last decade. And yet questions in the pitching staff abounded. And when the injuries hit, there was nowhere to go but down. Well, the Minnesota Twins finish in the cellar now that they're beginning to cut bait a little bit. They've left guys go, and it seems like they're starting to restock. Are they going to waste some of the Mauer Morneau years if those guys are on the diamond?
I think they very well could. You know, Mauer and Morneau are very important to this team, and each one of them is going to have to produce at their previous levels. We saw a big drop-off from both of these guys, and they need to step it up. You know, the infield leaves a lot to be desired in my mind. I don't think it's that strong.
at any position other than catcher. The outfield, you know, is okay. I like Josh Willingham. You know, I think he's a nice player in left field. Denard Stan and Ben Revere, you know, you have some speed between center and right. But, you know, like Kansas City, what's the deal in the starting rotation? You know, Francisco Liriano, he had a nice spring training. He needs to really step up. But is Carl Pavano the number two starter here? He didn't look good. And I think, you know, the Twins are only going to be as good as their pitching is. And if their pitching can't hold up, it's not going to matter what comes from the offense. Because let's be real, is this a team that's going to average 6-7 runs a game? I don't think so. Do you?
No, absolutely not. Let's order the Central here as you see them. I think I have a pretty good idea of how you're going to finish these guys, and then we'll head on to the AL East real quick.
All right, yeah. I mean, you know, like I've been saying, I just don't think there's a better team than Detroit in that division. After Detroit, I like Cleveland. Let's go with the Kansas City Royals third. I think they're going to be that good. The White Sox fourth, and the Twins in the cellar.
All right, then to the AL East. This is the division that cashes the checks for Major League Baseball. Let's talk about the top. The New York Yankees were not in the driver's seat until late in the season last year, and yet with the additions that they've made, there are certainly some question marks, especially in the pitching rotation, but it seems to be question marks of where guys fit, not whether they have enough weapons this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I don't really know what to expect from the Yankees. They're a really tough team to figure out because, you know, at times they can look really great and they can look really dominant. At other times they look flat and they look unmotivated. So obviously the lineup is stacked. You know, I love Curtis Granderson. I think Alex Rodriguez is in for a bounce back year as he got what's been popularly deemed as that Kobe treatment on his knees, referring to Kobe Bryant and the technique he received over the summer that has seemed to help him a lot. Mark Teixeira is obviously a real solid bat at first base. But they need to click. They need to come together as a team. They need to stop performing as individuals and perform as one cohesive unit. You know, Mariano Rivera might have been less than inspiring in his first appearance of the year, but you know he's obviously one of the best in the game, if not the best in the game currently. The starting rotation, you know, Sabathia is a horse. He's going to bring it every season. Phil Hughes has to be good. Hiroki Kuroda has to work out in the AL East, which I'm not sure he will. And I'm not a fan of Nova. I'm not a fan of Garcia, Freddie Garcia. So, you know, at the back end of this rotation, there are a lot of question marks. But at the same time, this is one of the most potent offenses in all of baseball, even if some of the key contributors to that lineup are on the older side at this point in their careers.
The darlings of the division, the Tampa Bay Rays, just have a way of endearing themselves to people. You talk about the low payroll, and of course it's fun to root against somebody other than the Boston Red Sox or the New York Yankees. Tampa Bay did not have a good start to their season and then came on really like gangbusters as time went on. They barely make it into the playoffs, so they have a shot again this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think they do. I expect a lot from Desmond Jennings. You know, let's not forget that this is a team that's supposed to get B.J. Upton back here shortly after he's starting the year with a minor back issue, but he should be back very soon. This starting rotation is just excellent. David Price, Matt Moore, and Jeremy Hellickson are three young arms who should anchor that rotation for at least the next 5 to 7 years and do so at a high level. James Shields had an unbelievable season last year, so they're legitimately four studs right there. Jeff Niemann is not quite as good as those four guys, but if he's got to be my number five on a staff, I'm absolutely fine with that. As for the offense, I think Carlos Pena coming back to the team will do a lot. Like I said, I expect a big year from Desmond Jennings. I don't think they're going to get anything from the catcher position with Jose Molina back there. I don't think that he's going to catch as many games as they're hoping to, even if it's just for defensive purposes. But, yeah, I think this team can make the playoffs, absolutely. But they can't. This is not a team that can afford a key injury. They can't afford Evan Longoria to go down for a month. They can't afford Desmond Jennings to miss a month or 6 weeks of time. They don't have a ton of depth. So, you know, I think they need their key contributors to really play well. but there's a lot to like because the starting rotation is just so strong. When you have good starting pitching, you can be in almost any game.
Lewis Hamway is waiting in the wings. We'll get to some NHL playoff preview stuff here in just a couple minutes. For now, let's run quick. We're low on time, Ethan. Let's talk about the Boston Red Sox. Let's talk about the Blue Jays and the Orioles, starting with the Sox. Can they bounce back? Obviously, their tailspin at the end of the year, fueled by beer and chicken wings, is well publicized at this point. But can they bounce back?
Maybe. I don't see it happening. This team is ugly. I think there's a lot of expectations. And Kevin Youkilis is older. Dustin Pedroia doesn't have a lot of help. I don't know what to expect from David Ortiz. And the pitching staff is just no good. And the bullpen is already self-destructing. I don't like this team. I think they can win 85 games. I think they're going to be prone to a lot of losing. As for the Blue Jays, I think they're great. I think they're a great young team. They have Brandon Morrow in the rotation who's going to need to step up. Same with Vicky Romero. Do I see them contending for a postseason spot? Probably not this year, but they're certainly on the right path. I don't even want to spend time on the Orioles. What a mess. No offense besides Adam Jones. No pitching. Just ugly up and down the roster. I don't have a lot of good things to say about this team. They need so much help, and they are a long way from getting it done.
Here's one bit of positivity. They're going back to the old-school Baltimore Oriole uniform setup, and we can certainly appreciate that. The Blue Jays have gone back to their 80s and 90s look, too. I'm digging that all the way. Before we go to break, Ethan, give us the standings in the AL East. Most people are considering this a four-team race this year.
Sure. I'm going to take Yankees, Rays, Red Sox, Jays, and Orioles.
Finishing as they did last season. That's surprising. I think I'll put the Blue Jays ahead of the Boston Red Sox, but maybe that's wishful thinking on my part. We have to go to break. Lewis Hamway from BleacherReport.com is waiting in the wings. We'll talk some NHL playoffs. Michael Schotte is just around the corner as well. He's got some NFL news and notes. There's NBA talk. That's all coming up next here on the Average Joe Sports Show on the Sports Geeks Radio Network.
Now's the time on Sprocket's Made Me Dog.
Don't worry, I'm ready.
And now we may party!
I don't need no instructions to know how to rock.
What in Judas Rockin' Priest is going on around here?
It's a big deal. Shut up and don't look at me.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Don't nobody understand the words that are coming out of your mouth, man.
It's understanding that makes it possible for people like us to tolerate a person like yourself.
Unbelievable. That's the only way anything is expressed. These completely insane jokes.
Nor a joke. Welcome back to the Average Joe Sports Show here on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. Joel Cordes, Ethan Noroff hanging out with you. Mike Schotte waiting in the wings. We're going to talk some NFL here shortly, but for now we welcome onto the program BleacherReport.com's Lewis Hamway. Lou, how are you doing?
Pretty good. The playoffs are about to start.
Yeah, and you've joined us a couple of times here to talk hockey over the past month or two. We've been getting ready for this moment. It's an exciting night, at least at the time of this broadcast, Saturday evening. We know who's going to be in the playoffs. We don't know quite all of the matchups yet, but it's becoming clearer by the minute at this point. So let's talk about the matchups that are set at this moment. Give me a couple of key storylines, players to watch, stuff that you're excited to see.
All right, so I'll go ahead and just start in the Eastern Conference first. The Rangers are locked in at 1. The Bruins are locked in at 2. Pittsburgh's locked in at 5. Philadelphia's locked in at 6. So that puts the 3rd seed, the 7th seed, and 8th seed all up for grabs. The Panthers and the Capitals, they're playing it out right now for the Southeast Division title. They're each playing Panthers are currently playing Carolina, and the Caps are currently playing the Rangers, actually, and they're up 4-1 in the 3rd. I'm trying to keep with these games as I'm talking. But whoever wins the Southeast Division is going to get that 3rd seed, and then the other one will likely, it looks like, get the 7th seed. But that's not absolutely set yet. The only game that's really set up so far with the seeding is Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, what is probably the one game that most people are going to want to see, given that about a week ago there was the altercation on the ice where Crosby took a cheap shot in the back from one of the Philadelphia players, and Pittsburgh wanted to get their payback, so they took a couple of their own and toward the end of the game, and it's about a minute left in the game. It turned out into an all-out brawl where you had all five players on the ice fighting and coaches on the boards yelling at one another over the glass, what's always a good thing and puts in for a good storyline, especially going into the playoffs. Those two actually met tonight in the last game of the season, and there was a couple scuffs and a little bit of a few cheap shots here and there, but nothing too bad because obviously no one wanted to risk it going into the playoffs, you know, losing anyone serious. But, you know, if you want to kind of see where this is going Wednesday night when the two meet, Philadelphia forward Scott Hartnell predicts, and I quote, a lot of blood in the game. So that's kind of what we can look forward to in that one. So that would definitely be one that's going to be fun to watch. Other than that, I think whoever the Capitals play, if they get a 3 seed or if they get the 7 seed, if they get the 3 seed, I think they'll go ahead and be matched up against New Jersey. And if they get the 7th seed, they'll be going against Boston. I'm kind of personally hoping that they get the 7th seed because I really like to see them against Boston. The Caps have had a terrible year by their standard. They barely scraped into the playoffs in the last few weeks by going on a nice little run. But they're in there now, you know, and with a player like Ovechkin, you never can know what he's capable of. You know, he's one of the best players in the game, even if he is having a down year. And if he decides to turn on and kind of get his head out of his butt and actually play like he can, you know, and get over his attitude and his little pity party, then he can handle any team in this league. So they're going to be a really dangerous team going into the playoffs. The West is very, very much up more up for grabs. Very little is set in the West. Vancouver or St. Louis will be your number 1 seed. The number 3 seed will be the Pacific Division winner. What's the Phoenix, San Jose, and L.A. are all still in contention for that. The two others will finish 7th, and the two others in that division will finish 7th and 8th, respectively. And Nashville is locked in at 4, Detroit is locked in at 5, and Chicago is locked in at 6. So the middle is all locked in, ready to go, but, you know, obviously it's all West Coast teams, and some of them haven't even started their game yet or just started, so we're still seeing how those will play out. Like I said, Nashville and Detroit at 4 and 5 is the only set game that we have. They're Central Division opponent rivals, and they split their season series 3-3, which, you know, doesn't really favor anyone. But I think Detroit's going to get by Nashville with relative ease. It's no more for the reason that Detroit team is just so experienced. They have so many players that have been to this playoffs before. And, you know, the NHL playoffs is one of the most grueling competitions in all of sports, just the high volume number of games and not very many back-to-back and the traveling and everything. You need a lot of experience to be able to handle that kind of pressure, and I think Detroit has it over Nashville.
Let's talk about the Western Conference. You said things are so in flux, and obviously Detroit is a team that's been there. You can talk about Vancouver as having had plenty of at least regular success in the regular season. But there's a lot of teams and a lot of faces that we've seen here before. In your opinion, Lewis, which squads are the best suited for this grind outside of the Red Wings? Who is going to take advantage of whatever seed they get and be in this for the long haul? Who's best suited for this?
Out of the West, I mean, you know, St. Louis, oddly enough, may be best suited for it simply because of their goaltending. They have been doing something very unique this year. They have two goalies, Jaroslav Halak and Brian Elliott, who have been basically splitting time for the team, not really based on form or if one's injured or one needs a rest or any reason, just basically splitting. That's the way they've done it. And through that, they've had the third best defensive record in the league. It's a formula that some people say, oh, you know, it's not going to work, but it actually has worked in the past. In 1971-72 season, the Bruins won the Stanley Cup playing Jerry Cheever and Eddie Johnson splitting time the exact same way these two are splitting time. And even in the playoffs, Cheever played 8 games and Johnson played 7, so there's not like there's any real formula to this, but it's definitely been proven to work. Oddly enough, the other team that I think can come out of there is actually possibly the LA Kings, because for the very same reason, they have an extremely good goaltender, Jonathan Quick, who's, he's in the running for the Vezina Trophy with the league's top goalkeeper of the year. I really like what he does, and he's kind of not as favorite as much to win it simply because his team isn't as good as Henrik Lundqvist of the Rangers, who obviously his team is going to win the President's Trophy and is the best in the league. The playoffs it can come down to goaltending. You know, you get that one goal, and if you can keep the shutout, you're going to win. You know, so I really think that either LA or St. Louis has the best chance simply because that goaltending that they have.
We'll head back out to the Eastern Conference in the next segment here. We'll take a look at the teams that are poised and ready for the playoffs to begin. We'll talk about any matchups that you're especially excited to see, and you'll get a chance to pick your conference and NHL champions. We're talking with Lewis Hamway from BleacherReport.com, featured columnist over there. Be sure to check out his not only NHL, but world football writing, covers a whole bunch of different topics. We're going to take a quick break here on the Average Joe Sports Show here on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. When we return, more NHL playoff preview. We've got some NFL news and notes from Mike Schottie and some NBA talk with Ethan Noroff and yours truly. That's all coming up next.
Branch me home!
I'll make you fun size.
Behold my true form and despair.
The innocent shall suffer big time.
You are extremely freaky.
Yeah, pretty much.
There can be only one.
You cannot die, McCloud.
Guess so.
You have power beyond imagination. Use it well, my friend. Don't lose your head.
I must go.
Ah, nature. Relaxing, isn't it?
Those clips are all taken out of context. You're just trying to make us look goofy and paranoid.
Hey, welcome back. We are Goofy and Paranoid. This is the Average Joe Sports Show here on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. Joel Cordes, Ethan Noroff, Mike Schottie, and Lewis Hamway from BleacherReport.com hanging out with you, talking a little NHL playoffs right now. Lewis, let's head back out to the Eastern Conference. We talked about a couple of the matchups, or at least one of them. That would be the Pittsburgh-Philly series that you're excited to see. Give me a couple of teams there that you think are ready to go, that are really well prepared for this, and then any other matchups that you're excited for, whether they be in the East or the West.
So other teams that are going to come out, I think Boston's always poised. You know, they came up, they're the reigning champions, and I just kind of personal philosophy, you know, you're the champion until someone knocks you off, and I think Boston just has all the makings to really repeat as the Stanley Cup champs. The one thing about them that's kind of thrown them off, made them a little less of a favorite this year, is simply because they've been a little erratic this year, I guess you could say. You know, they'll go out and win 5-0 one game, and then turn around and lose 7-2 the next. You know, they've kind of been inconsistent. But if they can find that little bit of wave going into the playoffs and ride it through, they should have no problem. And then, of course, the Rangers. I mean, they've been the best team all year. There's been no argument about it. There hasn't been any debate. And just the way they're playing, it's difficult to see why they don't have a good shot at making it either. Any kind of other matchups I really like? Like I said, you know, it's hard to really look at the West. There is a possibility of the two teams that I already talked about, LA and St. Louis, possibly meeting right off the bat in the first round. I think that would be an awesome matchup to see simply because, like I said, two extremely good goaltenders. So if one goal gets by, you know, the other team's really going to have to push hard to make sure they can equalize what opens up the ice, you know, and makes it exciting at both ends, a back-and-forth game. If there's one game you're going to try to want to watch this in this first round, it's got to be Philly-Pittsburgh. There's no way around that. Beyond the regional rivalry of the two, you know, both being from Pennsylvania, they're going to try to kill each other. I mean, you know, as much as we like to think that hockey is not, or we like to try to get rid of much of the violence out of it as possible, those two guys are going to be going after, those two teams are going to be going after each other's heads. So you know, if one of those games gets out of hand, it could really turn into a slugfest, and it could just be a very entertaining hockey to watch. Very physical.
Time to pick your conference winners. It's early yet. We'll certainly be checking in with you here as the playoffs go on. But Lewis Hamway, time to take a stand. Give me the winner from the West.
I like St. Louis. Like I talked about, you know, Halak and Elliott, they're two extremely great goaltenders. Given that kind of versatility that if one of them playing so well, they could go ahead and put in the other without worry. But beyond that, Ken Hitchcock, their head coach, has really done a great job getting that team into kind of the mind frame ready to play in a little different way than you expect of the old hard-nosed kind of coach. He's kind of kept a very loose locker room and kept things fun for that team. So I really like them coming out of the West. And then out of the East, I think it's going to be Pittsburgh. Malkin and Crosby, the two best players in the NHL, arguably. When they get going, there's no one that can stop them. And they've actually, you know, Pittsburgh's really kind of dropped because of how they've faced off against lesser teams in the league. They really step up for the big time games, and that's all you're playing in the playoffs. They had a 6-game losing streak at the turn of the new year that kind of knocked them out of the top of the conference. But that was about Crosby. It was right after his injury, so you know they're still trying to figure out who they are. But over the last month or so, they've really just, you know, Crosby's been playing excellent. Malkin's still keeping his own, and the whole team is just playing on another level. So I see them coming out of the East.
All right, and then finally for the million-dollar question, who's going to host the trophy when it's all said and done?
It's going to be Crosby and the Penguins. That's who I see it going. They've been too good. Crosby's only going to get better every single game, I think, you know, as he begins to find his legs more and more. And they're the most talented team in the league. Best players, not much you can argue against those two.
Lewis Hamway from BleacherReport.com, fantastic stuff as always. We will be checking in with you here as the playoffs go on. We'll get to see whether your predictions come true. But for now, we'll let you go. Thanks so much, Lewis.
Thank you, guys.
That's Lewis Hamway from BleacherReport.com. Be sure to head over there, check out his NHL and world football work. For now, we're going to switch gears in a big way on this half segment. We're going to bring aboard Michael Schotte back onto the program, our usual co-host, with a glass of scotch in one hand, glass of Crown Royal in the other, and the telephone in the other. Mike, it's time for some NFL news and notes. What's cooking?
Not a lot, apparently. If I'm that sauced, I don't want to be anywhere near an open flame.
Tell me a little bit about some of the player movement. It hasn't been a very eventful week as far as free agency goes. We're more starting to get into that time period where it seems like people are slowing down. They're getting ready for the draft here. Obviously, we don't have any camp battles yet, but some of those are starting to be drawn up on paper. What are the hot news items right now?
Yeah, I think the biggest news of the week comes from a little bit of an underrated free agent. Ladarius Webb was a restricted free agent for the Baltimore Ravens, and many, and I do mean many, thought that a team with a late first-round draft pick would strike out and try to sign Webb, who, quite frankly, is worth more than a first-round pick. When the NFL and the new CBA removed the first- and third-round tender, it made guys like Webb, like Mike Wallace, very attractive to teams, especially in the later parts of the first round. And Ladarius Webb has his best football ahead of him and was one of the best cornerbacks in football next year. Kudos to the Baltimore Ravens for being able to lock him up long term. With him locking down literally half of the field, it makes things a lot easier for both Ray Lewis and Ed Reed, who, while still very good, are both declining in range at their old age. Other news and notes from around the league, really not a lot. There's guys like Marcus McNeil, who had some injury history with the Chargers, but is still a very good tackle. He's still unsigned. London Fletcher, who's getting to the wrong side of the twilight of his career, still unsigned. There's a second, maybe even third tier of free agents who just haven't been picked up yet, and we're just now starting to chip away at that before the draft. Some guys that have moved this week. Dave Tollefson signed a 2-year, $2.5 million deal with the Oakland Raiders. They're going to use him as kind of a strong side defensive end, move him around a lot depending on the the down and distance, but he's going to be essentially either a small defensive tackle or a big defensive end for them, depending on where in the field they are. Other guys that are signed, Jacob Bell, offensive guard, was signed by the Cincinnati Bengals, who we're going to talk about in a little bit. Bell gives them some flexibility in the draft. They need interior offensive line help, but the best guard in the draft, David DeCastro, isn't likely to fall to them at number 17 in the first round. So rather than having to move up and get him or settling for the second best interior lineman, which is a center, David Kahns, now they have Bell. He's not great. He's not a long-term answer, but he does give them some flexibility there and some stability if they can't get one early on in the draft. Other news, pardon me, looking down my list. Jeremiah Bell, safety from Miami Dolphins, was released earlier this offseason. Many people were surprised. He didn't play super well last year, but more than enough people thought that he was one of the bright spots on that defense. The Dolphins thought differently and cut him. He drew interest from the Patriots this week. Another guy who drew interest was Bobby Carpenter, the linebacker, drafted way too high by Bill Parcells with the Dallas Cowboys, then brought over with Parcells over to the Miami Dolphins. Now he's a New England Patriot after a stint with the Detroit Lions. Bobby Carpenter is one of those guys that he will never be able to shake the fact that he was overdrafted, but when you put him in a reserve linebacker role, when you put him on special teams, when you're not paying him way too much money, he's actually a solid component for your team. Once again, he's one of those guys that the Patriots tend to like towards the end of their careers, heady guys that can keep that locker room churning out, hopefully, you know, just enough defensive power to help Tom Brady win games. Last news and note for the day, Amobi Okoye, defensive tackle, last played with the Chicago Bears, started his career with the Texans. He's been drawing interest from a lot of teams. There's this thought that somehow Amobi Okoye is a finished product in the NFL, but people forget that he's only 24 years old. He was the youngest ever player drafted when he came out of Louisville, and quite frankly, when push comes to shove, he also could have his best football ahead of him. Some team that signs him as a second-tier free agent could get top-tier talent.
Mike, off the field this week, the Cincinnati Bengals were involved in some more legal troubles. Now, typically the team with stripes on their helmets have been known with their off-field problems. It's been the players, and yet now we're having issues happening with cheerleading squads, and it seems to be just this perfect storm that has hovered over Cincinnati the last few years, where they cannot seem to have positive vibe with this team because of all the legal issues. What's going on in Cincinnati?
Well, I think from player perspective, and I know that it's wider than that, but from player perspective, you have a coach in Marvin Lewis who's always been willing to give guys second chances. You always have to find a niche, whether it's, you know, drafting offense in, you know, for the sake of defense, or, you know, vice versa. Or you take these low character guys hoping that they somehow keep it together long enough to put together some wins for you. With a salary cap and with the draft the way it is, it's hard to put together a solid football team, and teams like the Bengals tend to take shortcuts. And Marvin Lewis has always taken shortcuts, bringing in guys like Pac-Man Jones, bringing in guys like Ray Malaluga, guys that don't have the most stellar history but have football talent. So from a player's perspective, that's why all those players seem to come together for the Cincinnati Bengals and why they probably always will while Marvin Lewis is there. But from an organizational standpoint, Mike Brown just isn't a very good owner, and he's even a worse general manager. And so he's given himself that title. He has such loose control over that organization that, you know, it's hard to have any sense of accountability when the guy literally has failed to hire scouts or even put together a scouting department in decades. He has no idea what he's doing on a day-to-day operational basis, yet remains the person in charge of that sort of thing. And he's kept his coach, Marvin Lewis, around when this team has really only put together a couple decent seasons during Marvin Lewis's tenure. So when you have such a lack of accountability, even at the ownership level, that trickles on down to even, as you mentioned it, the cheerleading squads.
Joel Cordes, Mike Schotte, Ethan Noroff, hanging out with you here on The Average Joe Sports Show on BleacherReport.com. When we come back, it's time to talk a little NBA. The playoffs are just around the corner.
will power rank our top 10 teams. And there's this little thing happening between Dwight Howard and Stan Van Gundy. Maybe you've heard of it. That's coming up next.
You think I have nothing better to do than gather information on you and use it against you? Do you think I'm that petty?
Oh, of course not.
Oh, and by the way, you're not working hard enough.
What?
Yep, got it all on this tape right here. For everyone's safety and security, and to preserve our way of life, I'm taking a drastic step and putting up a security camera. Just one. For safety, security, and omniscient, unblinking information gathering of everyone's activities. I can't believe I'm hearing this. Wait a minute, let me rewind. Now get out of here. I have to go back to reading everyone's emails over the PA system.
Welcome back. This is the Average Joe Sports Show right here on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. Mike Schottie, Joel Cordes, Ethan Noroff with you this evening. Getting ready to talk a little basketball. The National Basketball Association. Joel, let's throw it to you first. This is a hard issue. You know that I'm right next to Orlando. I get to see this day in, day out. It's literally the leading story on the news. But Stan Van Gundy versus Dwight Howard, it's, in Orlando at least, the biggest battle since Steamboat Willie and Pirate Pete. Who's at fault here, Joel?
Well, of course, the story is Stan Van Gundy goes to the media the other night, says, I've been told by management that Dwight Howard has asked for me to be fired. I'm the coach. I'm not going anywhere. Dwight Howard didn't know that this was being said, comes in, gives Stan Van Gundy a hug during the exact same conference. And then, of course, they have the game to play that night. Howard is just awful. They both back away from their comments without backing away from them. Otis Smith, the GM, forces everybody in to talk about it, and both guys are sticking to their guns. There's some egos at work here. This is not the first time this has happened for Stan Van Gundy. Remember, he was run out of Miami about 6-7 years ago under similar circumstances where the stars there, including Dwayne Wade and Shaq, just were not getting along with his acidic style a little bit. He's not going to back down on it. He will maintain what he wants. He is not going to give up the image that he has of being the one in charge of this team. And yet, of course, Dwight Howard's ego is equally large. He knows that he has leverage. The Orlando Magic have bent over backwards in order to try and keep him. He knows that he can walk. Some people have said this is just Dwight being honest. He's saying, look, let's have a change of scenery here. If I'm going to stay, there's nothing wrong with him being honest about that to management. Yet at the same time, to do that during the middle of the season, probably not the wisest of moves. Who leaked this to Stan and why? Why would Stan go to the media with this and why? There's a lot of egos in play here, and this is going to blow up, possibly sooner than later. And when I mean blow up, it will be a first-round fizzle for the Orlando Magic.
What's interesting to me, Joel, both you and I have covered NBA games. How awesome would it be if all the sports leagues allowed media availability before the games? Drama like this can only happen in the NBA because drama like this only is possible in the NBA. It's the only time you get the coaches and the players at their most candid. Baseball, you're allowed to talk to them during batting practice, but who's actually concentrating on what the media is doing at that moment? NFL, you're not allowed anywhere near them. NBA just lets you have this perfect moment before the game of guys all ramped up, needing to talk to the media, and with the egos there, it's just phenomenal the stuff you can get, and this is probably the best of it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And the NBA, of course, is a personality-driven league, more so than baseball or football. There's fewer guys to choose from. You see their faces. It really is soap opera stuff. Some people are turned away by that, but these are certainly intriguing stories that keep us glued to the headlines.
Ethan, I'm going to kick it over to you. We're getting towards that magical time of the year in the NBA, and because of the shortened regular season, it seems like it's coming a little too soon. But Ethan, give me your power ranking of your top 10 playoff powers this year.
Wow. All right, I got to take Chicago at the top. Despite over 20 missed games for Derrick Rose, they still have the best record in the league. I mean, it's just incredible what Tom Thibodeau is doing with that team. Take Miami next, followed very closely by San Antonio, sneaking up into that third spot. I'll put OKC, Kevin Durant, and Russell Westbrook fourth. I'll put the Lakers fifth. Put the Memphis Grizzlies sixth. I think they're a really interesting team that has a lot of dangerous parts to it. I'll take the Celtics seventh. The Pacers eighth. I don't like the Magic at all, so they'll be outside my top ten. I think Dallas could sneak in and maybe nine there. And then let's talk about Houston, maybe in that 10th spot if they stay in the picture, or Phoenix possibly if they rise up and make the playoffs, get in that 10th spot. But, you know, I think it's clearly a top-heavy group within the first five teams.
Joel, let's kick the same question over to you. Who are your top playoff powers?
Well, here's how much I respect Ethan. We have nine of the same 10 teams. However, our order is very, very different. I'm going to go with the Oklahoma City Thunder in number one. I know that they've just recently beaten the Heat and then just even more recently been beaten by them. They've also slipped momentarily into second place in the Western Conference. The Spurs certainly have the bench depth now. They've got the veteran know-how. But there's just something about this OKC team when they get hot, and they're going to have that home court advantage. This, I think, is a team that is going to run through the Western Conference until they get to the finals. They are my number one ranked team simply because of how talented they are. They're balanced, and yet this is experienced youth. They've been playing together for years now. They've taken their lumps. They've been on the doorstep. There aren't many teams that are going to have the legs they will when the playoffs roll around. I'll put the Chicago Bulls in second. What they've done without Derrick Rose is nothing short of phenomenal. The question, of course, will be how do they integrate him back in now that he's on the verge of being fully healthy. I'll take the San Antonio Spurs in third, adding Steven Jackson to that bench. Every single team needs that crazy guy, wild card player. And the San Antonio Spurs were soft last year. They were way too nice. They've got a little bit more of an edge. The passing is phenomenal. I love Captain Jack. I love what Boris Diaw can give them as a passing forward. I'll go with the Miami Heat in fourth. That's not to say that Miami is anywhere outside of a championship shot. They're not. We all know what they can do when they get hot. We have certainly seen the cracks in their facade, however, over the last couple of weeks. Tough games. They've backed down. They're going to have to get over that as the playoffs go on. I agree with Ethan. I'll put the Lakers in fifth, a flawed team that's injured right now, and yet the pedigree is certainly there. The cards could fall their way. You never know what bumps in the road San Antonio or OKC could run into with a very, very difficult Western Conference, and they might end up expending so much energy against somebody like a Memphis or a Dallas or even a Houston that suddenly the Lakers are the ones that come limping out of the West. I'll put the Boston Celtics in sixth right now. I know they're banged up, but the fact that Avery Bradley has stepped in and played phenomenal basketball, especially defensively with Ray Allen being hurt, this gives the Celtics finally a quick backcourt. Avery and Rondo have been great together. Garnett's playing center. I'll go with the Indiana Pacers in seventh. I'm not super confident about that team. I just hope that they're not too confident about themselves. They need to have that underdog mentality they did last year, and then suddenly they have enough horses to go with it. But if they think they're a good team going into this playoffs, then they're going to struggle with some mediocrity. I'll give the Grizzlies the eighth spot. I love that team, too. We saw what they did last year. They can certainly do that again. We'll give the defending champs the ninth spot, as Ethan did. You got to knock them off. Certainly trying to replace the fire of Tyson Chandler and J.J. Barea, Deshaun Stevenson, with woe-is-me guys like Vince Carter and Lamar Odom. That's not a recipe for success, but maybe they've got something left. I'll put the Atlanta Hawks as my 10th team, simply because there's a lot of talent there. Do they have the opportunity to win the East? No. But they do have the opportunity to make things difficult, maybe even more so than a Boston or an Indiana, depending on the matchup.
That's all the time we have left for the Average Joe Sports Show this evening. For Joel Cordes, for Ethan Noroff, for everyone else, this is Mike Shoddy. Have a great week.
Take away our phones, and you can take away our keys, but you cannot take away our dreams.
That's right, because we're like sleeping when we have them.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.